Hello and welcome to Grieve and Grow with Julia Go. I am Julia. I'm a certified transformational master coach and I am bereaved mom. And I want to share this podcast episode with you where I talk about my loss, my personal story. And I had the honor in 2020 to give an interview to Karen Lindley Evans, who is a fellow grief coach, and she interviewed me for her group, Rising Above in Memory of, on Facebook. And I wanted to share this with you because I felt it was a really honest and deep interview where I was explaining a lot about my loss and also about what I'm doing as a coach. And a few of you who listen might notice that I'm sharing a lot of old episodes, which I still think are valuable. But I want you to know that I am on the hunt for a microphone. Things are not as easy here in Argentina as they are in other countries. So I've been looking for something, trying to find a new microphone so I can record new episodes that have a better quality than the old ones and than what I'm recording right now. So you will be able to listen and really focus on the content without having background noises and struggling with what you're hearing or struggling with understanding. So I just want you to know that I am aware of that. I'm putting myself and my knowledge, my experience out, knowing that it is not perfect yet. I'm not sure if it ever will be perfect, but I want you to know that it will be getting better. So I hope you still get value from this episode and from listening to my story. And I would love to hear from you if you're resonating with something. If you want to share with me your story, I always feel honored. So please let me know. Send me a message. And I'd love to hear from you.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for being here today. I am very excited to officially interview Julia Go, who I've had the pleasure of meeting and talking to a few times, and she lives on the other side of the world. So for her, she just woke up and she looks like that. So pretty good.
I wish it's 8 a.m. Been awake for 2 hours.
And you got the major coffee going there. I see some pretty strong coffee going.
So. It's the second one.
Really? Well, thank you for doing this. I appreciate it so much. We're going to talk about something that's near and dear to your heart. And you reminded me when we spoke earlier this week that next week is Baby Loss Awareness Week. And that's something that I definitely want to be acknowledging for the women in my group who've been affected by this, which are many. So can you tell me about yourself, tell everyone where you are in the world and how you came to be in this position of talking about this?
Yeah. So at the moment in the world, I am in New Zealand and it's a little bit after 8 a.m. So I think for you it should be 2 or 3.
3.
Right?
It's 3
p.m. Yeah. So I'm a little bit ahead of you at the moment. For me, it's the 2nd October. I'm talking about the topic of baby loss and organizing a video series for Baby Loss Awareness Week is, I feel, my passion and my purpose. And the reason behind that is that in February 2016, I have lost my son, Simon. So to give you a little bit of background about what happened is I had planned pregnancy. Everything was going well, like really healthy pregnancy. All the tests were going fine, which is often, it's not always the same, but often I hear that when I talk to other women in that situation. And one night without any signs before, I went into labor, not really realizing that I went into labor in my case, because I was in the 26th pregnancy week. I thought, okay, maybe that's a stomach bug. Something is, you know, something is off, but I did not actually think, oh yeah, that must be labor pain now. So it took me a while to realize, okay, you need to go to the hospital. I called the ambulance, called my parents, had my partner there, woke him up in the middle of the night, said, yep, you know, you don't have to come to the hospital. You have to go to work tomorrow. It's going to be fine. Everyone came with me, like drove after the ambulance. Of course, the people in the ambulance were like, yeah, another overreacting pregnant woman. we don't need to take her to the hospital at all. Maybe we can just like give her some meds to calm her down or whatever. I fought my way to the hospital, of which I knew they have a neonatal care station, because we have two, which are kind of similar distance. And until now, I'm really, really grateful that I did that, because our son was born that night, and I went into a C-section, so I was not awake during birth, and I just woke up a few hours later. And of course, first thing was that I thought was, okay, is everything all right? We already had a name. My son is called Zimon. Is Zimon okay? So first of all, it looked all good. He was, for being born premature, pretty strong, tall. So all the organs were working. The only thing that was not working, which is normal at that state, is the lungs. You can get an injection if there are any signs that you get a premature born baby that will develop the lungs earlier. But of course, we didn't have that. But it still looked like, okay, you know, this is how it is now, but everything will be fine. We'll stay in hospital for a few months, and then we'll take our baby home. And day by day, his condition worsened. Different things came up: the lungs, the stomach, the kidneys. Everything had some sort of failure, so he had to undergo a few surgeries. And during those times, that also affected his brain. So doctors started talking to us about, oh, you know, you see, this part of the brain is more for the physical, this is more for the thinking area, for everything
mental
else. How do you say it in English? I say, because I'm originally from Germany.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I was going to ask you. Interesting accent for New Zealand, right?
Yes. I forget about that. But yeah, I'm originally from Germany, and that's also where Zimon was born.
Okay. So you were there at the time?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I came here 1 year after Zimon died. So yeah, but that's like part of the story afterwards that helped my personal recovery. I think it's different for everyone. Basically doctors starting preparing us to make a decision. They said, okay, tomorrow we need to talk, have a look, or think about what you want for your baby. Like, he will definitely be disabled. Probably 80% in both areas, physically and mentally. And I remember that I had a talk to my partner, and we were not arguing, but we were talking about it. And he said, yeah, well, we can't do that. I don't want our son to live like this. And I think I was in that moment still like, well, you know, I want our son to live.
Right. Whatever it takes.
That's what I want. And I know that I'm strong and I'm capable of taking care of him, you know. So we had that conversation, and I remember that night before we went to bed, my partner was allowed to stay in the hospital that night for the first night. I went to Simon, who was in neonatal care. We were not sleeping right next to him. So my room was somewhere else. I think it was because of space, but also because of hygiene and everything. So it made sense. Would have been amazing to be with him all the time, but that was just not possible.
But you also need rest, you know. Such a traumatic thing that you're going through, and going without sleep on top of all of those other important things that are happening. You do need rest. So,
I remember that I tried to take care of myself, because I also wanted to, when I'm there for him, I wanted to be the best version of myself, but it was always, well, it's the balance, you know. I also didn't want to sleep that long because I wanted to be there.
Right.
The thing is, I know that in between, like, sometimes I was there and I can't really remember much of it because it's just like all a blur. It's so much, it's a traumatic experience, and so many parts of my brain and my body were just functioning, but actually not completely, right, like, working, not completely conscious in there. I remember that night that I actually went to him. I know that I had an emergency C-section, and you have to be cut open a little bit more than in a normal C-section, because in a normal C-section, your baby is fully developed, strong. So they usually can just, as gross as it sounds, hold your baby and pull it out.
Pull them out, yeah.
Yeah. But with a premature baby, they need to be really, really gentle, really, really careful, and cut you open wider.
Right.
So there's no way.
I didn't really realize that. I didn't know that.
Well, me neither before.
Yeah. Now you're the expert.
Yeah. Weird way to get an expert.
I know.
So, yeah, that night, I remember that I went to Simon, if it was the night or the day, but it was one of the last things that I actually were talking about to him, was that I told him that I don't want him to suffer for me. And so I could see in those 5 days that he was a fighter, like he was fighting for his life, surgery after surgery. And with every breath he was taking, he was fighting. So I basically went there and gave him permission to stop fighting when he wants to stop fighting. And I gave myself that permission too. Like I said, okay, you know, I'll be here for you, and I know I can take care of you, whatever happens. But if that's not the life you want to live, can you please send me a sign? And it's okay if you want to leave now, it's okay. And that night, the doctors came in our room and said, okay, you have to make the decision now. We can send him in another surgery right now. We have to do it right now. We can't wait until morning, or you can't make that decision in an hour. You have to do it now. There is a, I think it was 60 or 80 blur percentage that he is not surviving that surgery. So that was my sign. And my partner was on that opinion before. For me, it made it just easier to not make the decision the next day when he was lying there looking peaceful in his incubator.
Right. He was in distress.
Yeah.
And you didn't want to see him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sitting there seeing him. And of course, like now I know he was in his incubator, all calm and peaceful because of all the opium and pain medications that he was getting. But in that moment, he just looked like a sleeping baby. And to say to your sleeping baby, all right, we're going to turn off the life support now. I think I would not have done that. And with that surgery that he probably would not have survived, and knowing that he was in distress, had even more pain than before, you know, all the panic that a little baby feels. Like, I was thinking about that all the time being there. I've always been a little bit like, I want to say woo-woo for lack of better words, but I wanted a natural birth. I never wanted a C-section unless it is really necessary for some reason. I didn't want to get any pain medication. So we had completely the opposite, and I was already grieving that dream birth that I had while he still was alive. I was like, oh my God, you know, this is so bad for my baby. If I, you know, had realized what actually is going on, probably would not have spent that time worrying about that.
But that's what we do. But yeah. Nothing went according to plan is what it sounds like.
Yeah, nothing went according to plan. And I think that's always the case when we lose someone.
Right.
Like, no one says like, yeah, I really planned to lose that person at that time. And it's exactly what I wanted. Now I can move on.
Right.
We decided to turn off the life support in that moment, and he actually, and that's one thing that I am extremely grateful for, because not a lot of moms have that, he actually died in my arms. So that was the first time that I could hold him. He was lying on my chest, and I guess every mom can understand what a joy it is to hold your baby. And then knowing that he's dying right now, like, it was the best and the worst moment of my life, such a paradox in itself. I still remember that like dearly. Like, I love thinking about it, and it also is one of the hardest memories to go into.
Right. Well, it was both. Yeah. It was, you know, his life and his death right there.
Yeah.
And so thank you for like explaining it so beautifully, because I know that it's not easy to do that. And you never really told me that before, so I didn't know all the details about that. So I hope you know that, like, this is so many moms struggle, and it doesn't even just apply to babies, because there's many times where moms are forced to make those decisions that they don't want to make, even if it's a grown man or a little tiny baby, you know. It's just one more layer of losing a child.
Yeah.
And it's so hard. And I can see that it's so hard and so beautiful for you at the same time. So you're a beautiful person. I already knew that. But so how long has it been? You said it was 2016?
Yeah.
Okay.
4.5 years already.
Okay.
Unbelievably.
And so what happens after that? You're in the hospital, and are you surrounded by your family, or how does that work?
So for us, and there was a little bit of our choice, the doctors gave us the option to be discharged. So that was in the middle of the night. It was around 3 p.m. that Simon took his last breaths. So the doctor sent us back and said, all right, you know, you can lie down in your rooms now and try to sleep. They also offered us, and we both took it, some sleep pulse so we could sleep.
Right.
Because I think none of us would have. Yeah. I took a little bit of responsibility and didn't tell my parents before the morning, because, well, they had already a few sleepless nights. They couldn't change anything. I think, well, that's all blurry.
I understand that blurry feeling for sure.
Yeah. I think it actually wasn't me. I think it actually was my partner who called my parents and his mom. His mom doesn't have a car usually. He was picking her up, so that didn't happen that day. Well, there are a few things that I would do different from where I am now with all the knowledge. So the doctor said, well, if you want to go and see him, we can get him back up like they're usually having in hospitals, like in the basement,
right,
cooling station, for lack of better words,
right,
a room for everyone who died. And I think usually it's 24 hours, and then the funeral directors, no, that's not true, it's longer, it's a little bit longer, and then the funeral directors that you decide on, pick them up. At least that's the way it works in Germany. And I decided I didn't want to see him, which is one thing that I regret, but for lack of support in the hospital and someone explaining to me how important it can be for your healing and for your memory making, I did not know that. So we were going home, discharged, and and then never, you know, until he actually had his funeral, I never saw him again. So for me, in between, I went to my parents. I couldn't go home. We had started preparing everything. There were still 3 months left.
Right.
We had all the stuff and we're setting up his room, and I just
couldn't. Especially when it's your first, you're all over all that stuff. Yeah. You know, you're so excited.
Yeah. And I mean, there were all those like packages that were like just open and with all the baby clothes, and it was just too painful to go home. I just could not look at that.
Well, I think a lot of people who've been through something similar to what you've been through probably would have taken the same choice of no, I don't want to see him. I don't want to see him like that, or I don't want to remember him like that, or whatever. So, you know, as much as you say you regret it, you know, and now since you've learned more, you know, just know that you're probably speaking to a lot of moms who have made the same decision that you made,
yeah,
and probably regret it too, but you know, it is what it is. So once you've, you know, the funeral's over, so you do get to see him at the funeral, and but once that's over, what was that like for you? How do you get from a place of being so hurt to being where you are now, which is helping people?
Yeah, I think like all of that what we're talking about is actually just the starting point. And you know that you had your own loss and you know your own grief, and you're talking to so many women, but it was basically afterwards where all those other things started to show up. Like I felt often so unheard and misunderstood by the people around me. Some people really are insensible. Like there are comments like, you can have another baby, which of course, I don't know why my camera is not focused. Of course, it doesn't really help me at all.
Right.
Like, yeah, sure.
But, so many dumb things people say.
Yeah. I'm a little bit distracted by this. I don't know what to do about it, though.
I've never had that before.
I don't know.
It's not terrible, but
no, here we go.
I don't know.
No, that's better, I think.
That's better, yeah.
So, yeah. Well, there are a few things that popped up for me afterwards that I know are what other parents go through too. And that's that just feeling misunderstood by everyone else, not knowing how to talk to people, feeling hurt by other people talking about pregnancies. Friend telling you that her friend is pregnant, for example, seeing pregnant women on the street, or seeing women with how are they called,
like a newborn,
like newborns in general, you're always comparing, okay, you know, how far along is she, or how old is that baby, would that be the same age if, you know, Zimon was here, he would be that old right now, and so on and so forth. And I think like one of the biggest things that were hard for me at the beginning was all that heartbreak, like that emotional pain that became physical pain that you felt in your body. And I know at times I did not see sense in living so much anymore because it was just too painful. And it was hard to really know how to cope with those emotions and also cope with the thoughts, because I did not want to think that, like, I was thinking, like, I don't know how to live like this. And then I was beating myself up for thinking that I don't know how to live like this.
Right. Nobody's prepared for that. Yeah. Nobody's prepared for that kind of pain.
No, definitely. It is, I think, like, one of the worst things and pains that you can feel. I think we all are different, and we all, like, grieve differently. So you can't really say, like, this is more and this is less and this is worse and this is not hard at all.
Right.
But, yeah, you are never prepared, no matter what it is.
Right.
All the plans you have for the future, they're just like gone. You're living in a parallel world because you know actually this is what just should happen. But you're sitting there on Christmas with empty arms.
Right.
And all you have left are some, you know, some memories, not a lot. You don't have, that's the other thing, you don't have so many memories.
Right. That's why I wanted to talk to you, because, you know, in my group, for whatever reason, you know, and I don't know if it has to do with just percentages of how these things happen or the fact that moms like you don't always feel like they have a place to go. They don't always feel so accepted or that it makes sense for them to be among other child lost parents. You know, like it doesn't feel the same because, you know, that's, I feel this so much because we do have some moms in there that, you know, they don't, we were lucky. I mean, I had 8 years of memories. And I wouldn't trade that for anything, no matter how much pain. And so you guys really had this experience where, you know, all of that was even taken away from you. Yeah. And I just, you know, I would never dismiss it. I feel it. And two, you know, I think some people, outsiders, might have the idea that maybe it doesn't sort of count, you know, like it's not as bad because, you know, if it didn't result in a full-term pregnancy, a full-term baby. And I mean, it's just the total opposite. Like you were ready to go and live the rest of your life with a disabled child, you know?
Yeah. And well, that's definitely one thing that you experience over and over and over again. People who are judging you for still grieving, or people who really don't understand what happened. They're like, well, but, you know, it was not really a baby. It was, definitely was, like,
right.
from the moment I saw the pregnancy test,
I thought it was a baby. So yeah, you were a mom.
Yeah. And it might be hard for some people to understand. And I started at the beginning avoiding those people or people in general because I was so afraid of being hurt again and again and again and again. And you also sometimes, like when you're grieving, you know that you get tired and everything is just, yeah, everything is harder, like your normal life is harder. So you don't have the strength to explain that to people.
Right.
Now I can go and talk about my experience, and when someone comes and talks about, well, but you know, I can explain what's the difference between how he or she is thinking about that and how I was actually feeling about it. But shortly afterwards, you're just like,
yeah,
you want to turn around and just go back to bed and right. continue crying.
Right. So I would just feel like for somebody that was going through it, oh my goodness, like how helpful it would be to have someone like you to go through it with. And you had said something to me the other day about, you know, kind of like being allowed to heal, mm-hmm. even though you're still grieving too.
Yeah.
You know, that it's both.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is really important. So for me, like all those things that I was just talking about, all the painful moments that I experienced, there was a point in time when I said like, okay, that's not it. Like, I'm allowed to feel this, but I also don't want to be the victim anymore. Like, I experienced this incredible loss, and I've been the victim to it. It was not my decision. I didn't have the power to decide that. But now I'm going to take my power back for whatever I have control over. And that meant, for me, honoring the legacy of Zimon and being the best person that I can be, living the best life that I can live. And what I had to learn, or what I automatically learned through doing this, is that that also means allowing to be okay with where you are in your grief journey. So making that decision didn't mean that I woke up the next morning and I've been like, all right, everything is fine now.
Yeah.
Like I'm super happy. But it meant that I allowed myself to feel whatever I was feeling without beating myself up. And that means having days where I'm just crying and things are triggering me and I'm just pissed off, or having days where I'm happy and I'm allowing myself to be happy without beating myself up for feeling good.
Right. That's the tricky part of that part of grief where you start to make that transition. It's like you're surprised by having a good day and you remember what it feels like and it feels kind of good, but then you start to have guilt associated with just the fact that you were able to have a good day or a good laugh or a good whatever.
That thought of like, does that mean that I don't love my baby enough? You know, definitely doesn't. Like, I can tell you that from where I am right now, that I remember that thought and almost feeling bad for feeling good.
Right, exactly.
So, well, for me, that was the turning point, and then I started being more proactive about my healing. And I started like going into different techniques, like counselors, grief group. I started doing Reiki healing and just a lot of different modalities. And I also found coaching like you did. And for me, like that, all of that, like over time, just brought so much healing and so much peace into my life, where I'm like now at the point where I'm like, I am so at peace with what happened. Of course, it's the hardest time of my life. And of course, I don't wish it for everyone, no matter how much growth comes out of it in the end. But I can honestly say that I'm grateful for everything that I've learned since then. The only thing that I've been missing, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, is having those practitioners or professionals like therapists, coaches, Reiki healers, who really understand me, who really experience something like the loss of a baby. Because sometimes, and that comes with the allowing of feeling grief while healing, sometimes I felt that is not happening. Like I did so many things on my own and allowed so many things on my own that I want to offer a space for women where they can be exactly where they are. So it's not about, you know, I'll always trust that the process is right. Like I trust the process. I trust that wherever everyone is exactly where they need to be.
And when you were going through those different things and trying all those different things, I mean, was there ever a time where you went to someone and it didn't feel right and you made a decision not to keep going, or
Oh yeah, well, especially with the therapist I had to go to, actually a few before I found one woman that I stayed with for a while, because sometimes you're just like feeling so pushed. That was what happened for me. Like I felt like I'm wrong where I am. Like I could go and talk to the friends that don't understand me, because that therapist was just the same way, just like trying to fix me. But I didn't feel I was broken. I felt like I'm in the process, and yes, I want to heal, but I don't want to forget.
Right.
You know?
Oh my goodness. Ugh. That's the message. That's it right there. And that's so perfect. And I'll give you a lot of credit for not saying, oh, well, forget it. Therapy's no good. You know,
I felt that I eventually came to a point though, where all the therapy, also with the therapist that I was working with, that I felt a connection to, at a point I was there and it was not what I needed anymore.
Right.
And that was when I came to coaching and found all those different other modalities that were, you know, allowing me more growth next to the healing, and just, yeah.
Kind of opens your eyes up just a little bit to something new, and just learning about other people's experience. That's why whenever I interview people, and I know that, you know, to go back to your early days and the pain that you felt, like I can feel it. I know that it's not easy. And I just feel like, even though it's so painful, that's what other moms need and want to hear about, because they want to know that it hurt for you just as bad as it hurt for them, and that you have moved to a different place. Not that you're over it or anything like that, but that you were able to find different things and find your way. And you're still finding your way. I mean, you know, it hasn't really been that long for you at all to be where you're at and to be able to help other people.
Yeah.
But it feels good, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, helping other people is, I think, what sometimes like lights me up and brings me that spark to start the day, and just like, all right, cool, that's what I'm doing. And on the other hand, I also feel sometimes it is difficult, because, and I understand that with grieving moms, sometimes the response is not there. And I feel it, like with all the lack of energy that I had in that time, I would not go online and message here and there and say thank you to everyone. And it's not that I expect that,
right.
But sometimes I'm like, is anyone hearing me? Like,
yes,
you there?
Am I helping anyone?
Yeah, hello. But you know, it's okay, because every now and then there comes this one message. Like yesterday, I got a message saying, I don't know how you found me. I was following someone on Instagram, but I'm so glad you did. And I was like, wow, that is just means so much for me. So should
right.
I?
That's I worth was, everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, what I'm doing now, just to talk about that a little bit, like I'm having a podcast where irregularly I post episodes about, for example, why losing a baby is different to losing an older child, losing your parent, losing someone else. What's the difference about that?
What's your podcast name? I want to...
Like everything that I'm doing is under the slogan, heal your heart after baby loss.
Okay. Sorry I interrupted you, but I just want to make sure I include that. There's not all that many podcasts out there.
It's getting more. I'm happy to say that. It's getting a little bit more. People are getting more open to talk about that. I feel even in those 4 years, the change in that. And I feel like it's so important because at the beginning, even for me, it's been such a taboo to talk about grief and right. What I'm saying here. And I feel like it's getting a little bit better, at least in the online world. Don't think it has translated completely to the outside world yet, right. Because you have
especially now, you know. But part of what you do by talking about it is not only are you helping those moms that have been through it, but you're kind of educating people that don't have a clue. You know, if they will just listen to these messages and understand like why we're still talking about it and grieving and all. It's not because we want attention or because we're poor me, you know, it's that we need to, it's that we were, you know, we are moms. We're still a mom, you know, and we will just like anyone who would talk about their children that were still alive, you know, they're still our children.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a big part of our life. Being mom.
Right. And I was going to say, what are the, you know, the other day when you were talking, you were telling me about just all the different areas of your life that can be touched by this. It's not just I'm sad, I'm grieving. You know, there's things that come up about forgiveness, and regrets, and guilt, and your relationship with your partner is a big one, right?
Yeah, it is. Well, for me, it ended up in a breakup.
It did.
Which I would not necessarily say, like, I don't regret a bit, but it didn't make it easier. Like, for me, it was my own eye-opening about, okay, maybe this is not exactly what I want. But it took me a while also to say that out loud, because then I felt like all the judgment around, but you decided to have a baby with this man. Like, yeah, I did, because I wanted a baby.
Well, it helps you prioritize really strongly. You know, when you're young and kind of clueless on some of this stuff, you don't really understand the types of things that are so important.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure what you've been through, it really showed you what you, Julia, not anybody else, needs from a partner in a relationship and in life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what you were saying right now is just the important thing. So it's not about what anybody else needs or having that roadmap to grief or whatever. It's just so different for everyone. Like when I'm working with people, I see similarities. Like I see that first birthday that is just so hard on everyone. Like, what do I do on that day? Like how do I survive it and how will I feel? And it's just such a difficult moment. And I also see so many differences and struggles. Like some people are like, I was scared that my relationship was break, but I'm actually feeling so close to my partner. And then they are though thinking about their job. And I'm wondering if they really want to do that anymore. Like, am I still passionate about that? Or does that just seem super irrelevant, what I'm doing right now?
Yeah.
Because so many things that were, well, just normal for you become so irrelevant. Like, also, I mean, when you talk to friends, and they start talking about their daily life and you sit there sometimes after you lost your baby and you think, like, really, is that your problem? Is that your biggest problem? Like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be like judgmental of them, but I am.
Right.
In that moment, I'm like, if that's your biggest problem, your life is fine.
Right.
Sometimes I said that when I could muster to do it in a loving way. I was able to tell friends and say, like, look, I can see where this is annoying to you, but right now I don't have the capacity to listen to that because my heart is broken right now and your problem seems really, really small for me. So
right.
I can see that you feel this way. And I probably would have felt the same way, you know,
before
my case 5 years ago. But I can't really sit here and listen to that and be there for that right now. I need, need to take care of myself.
Right. Well, that's one reason why this is important. Talking about it is important. And just like, so this Baby Loss Awareness Week is coming up. And that's why it's so important to have a Baby Loss Awareness Week for so many reasons. But people need to know that, you know, this is real, you know, and it's not just something to be, you know, dismissed or tell people, oh, you know, you're going to be fine. You know, everything's fine. So what do you think is important about Baby Loss Week? And what are you, do you have something planned in order to commemorate it?
Yeah. So I'll be launching my first mini video series for Baby Loss Awareness Week. And well, creatively, I call it Heal Your Heart After Baby Loss mini program because that's how I call everything. And people well, know what they're you know, what it is about. And for me, that's important. Like it's a mini video series where we talk about how to create that memory and honor our babies. But it's also where we talk about topics like forgiveness for ourselves, forgiveness for others, about how to cope with emotions, and where we kind of try to shift some perspectives on where can I see some light in that dark situation and that I'm in right now. And it's basically like a really, really comprised form of the program that I work with my clients. And I do have, because I think personal touch is so important and connection during Baby Loss Awareness Week, I will have 3 calls that are live. So we'll have one call for that should accommodate each time zone because like I said, I'm
especially
in
where you are, yeah.
And well, you know, fortunately, all over the world, we have a community of women who have lost their babies. So it's not nothing that you can say. It's just, you know, that one area. And
no.
For me, it is important to create that container and that space where people can honestly, without judgment, talk about what they're going through. And I have women who come to me and are like, are you really judgment-free? What about if I, you know, had a baby with trisomy and they had like a low diagnosis of surviving even birth and I decided to terminate the pregnancy? Do you work with me? Like, would you work with me too? Like, of course, because it's not that you were deciding in that case that you're gonna have a baby that probably won't survive. It's not that you grieve less because you made that decision. Like, I made the decision to turn off life support at a certain point. So I feel that we have a judgment-free space is really important. And, you know, I feel like I've never judged someone who made any kind of decision and is grieving the loss of their baby.
I feel that from you, and I feel that's what people need. You know, I feel that you could empathize so well with these people that are in this. I mean, it feels like a unique situation, you know, for me, because it's different. But, you know, the more you can get down to the similarities of it, the more people you can, you know, the more people you'll be able to relate to and help. So yeah. I know it's not easy sometimes to hold that space for people, you know, when you're hurting too, but I know that it's so valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, well, for me, it is something different because I don't know if it's different, but for me, what shifted things is I also do energy work. And when I work with people, I often get the energy, but I'm able to move it through my body and move it out. Sounds a little bit woo-woo, but we all, in our emotions, we're all energy. It's right. Just vibration in our body. And being able to hold that space and just, you know, take away some of the pain, take away some of the vibration that people are ready to let go of and just like move it through and move it out is, well, it helps me, that energy work, to not take it on my own. Because I know
it just
how
it passes through.
Yeah.
I mean, and you say it's woo woo, but I feel like in our situation, we need to be open to whatever. I feel like it helps to be open. Well, you know, whatever may help you.
For me, it definitely changed my perspective on those things. And well, you know, some people don't understand my grief, so I can live with people not understanding that I have a spiritual side now. Completely did not have that before, and a lot of my friends were like, "What's happening?" But that's okay, you know.
But it helped you. That's the bottom line is, you have an experience you can talk about, and it was helpful for you. And so you want to share those things with people.
Yeah. I, you know, definitely am not pushing anything on anyone. I think we're all ready for things in our time. And I'm working with so many different tools that I don't need to go and tell you, well, you know, right now you really should do a meditation, or you really should do that, or should do that, because that's not how it works. Like, you don't need another should in your life.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I think they really should call you, and, you know, especially, you know, for someone who's in a unique situation that, you know, has been through this and needs somebody who would understand more so than just the small group of people that surround them, you know, not everyone's been through this. So I feel like I can tell that your best tool is your heart. You know, I can tell that you can empathize and you can listen. And I think that's sometimes what people really need.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. We will post this in the big group and the little group. And I'm just wondering, what would you say is the best way for someone to like connect with you or find out more if they wanted to?
Yeah, I will, well, first of all, share a link with you, I guess, to my mini program. Okay. So that will be starting on the 9th of October.
Okay.
Because that's when Baby Loss Awareness Week starts.
Okay.
So people can register there, and then they will get daily videos. And with that, there comes an email which has all the links, so you don't need to post Some people okay. aren't, you know, your people probably are on Facebook because that's where they're seeing that right now.
Right.
I have a lot of people who are on Instagram. There is a huge, amazing baby loss community.
Yes.
So I, you know, I will put all the links to Facebook, Instagram, my podcast, in that first email that
okay.
will be coming. But joining us for the mini program, I think, would be an amazing first step of connection.
Right. Yeah. Okay, good. Well, I thank you for taking your early morning hour out of your day to talk to my people.
Thank you.
This is so good. And actually, you know, like so much of what you talked about could apply to all of us moms. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have those feelings. So I just want everyone to watch this. It was really, really good. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for taking the time and talking to me. It's for me, and I think for every mom, always such an honor to talk about our baby, our experience, and, you know.
It's really all we want.
Yeah.
I know.
So thank you for listening. And
thank you for listening to this episode. I'm honored that you're still here despite the terrible audio quality. And yeah, like I said at the beginning, I'm working on that. I want to say bye, and until next week, I'm sending you a big virtual hug. Be gentle and kind to yourself. It's the most important thing you can do. And as always, I'd love to hear from you. Bye.